This is the Mind Your Business podcast.
Hello and welcome to another edition of the Mind Your Business podcast. My name is Matt Williams. I'm joined as always and in person today, which I'm really excited about, by the fabulous Alan Clark. And we've been a little while away. Do you want to give the excuses to the listeners or do you want me to?
I'll take one for the team. I think, and it's a word we use all the time, and I think we've faced it ourselves, and the word is busy. And it's been months and months of busyness, and in truth, we have been desperate to be behind the mic, and we just haven't quite made it. But we've confessed our sins, we're back in the room, absolutely, and we're going forward together.
We have, and we've come up with a new plan as to how we record these podcasts, which I think is going to give us a little bit more consistent output, because we had a consistent time in the diary, didn't we, that happened every week, but we found we were talking but not recording because we were just giving excuses as to why we couldn't stay on the call for long enough to get through a whole episode. So we've fixed that. Alan is now in Cypher HQ in our little podcast studio, and we're ready to go. So that's enough of that. What are we talking about today, Alan?
So, actually, we're going to talk about when things go wrong. We haven't really gone there sort of explicitly on this podcast before, and I think we could get a lot of mileage and a lot of value out of a title that is something like When Things Go Wrong.
Okay, and we're talking, because we talked once about liquidation, didn't we?
Yeah.
We're not talking about things going quite that seriously wrong, but where something's got, you've hired the wrong person, or you've promoted the wrong person, or you've got a client that's, you know, you've delivered something and it's not gone well. That's what
we get into the mix of all that. I also think there's a, maybe in terms of being up for it, resilience, being positive, moving forward as a business owner, what you've just described and lots of other things can derail you, can slow you down. So there's definitely in this journey that called CEO-ship, leadership, entrepreneurship, of being a self-starter, moving forward, not being derailed, and thus resilience is a word that's kicked about. But this goes hand in hand with working, actually creating the clarity, first of all, to actually see what is going wrong, admitting to yourself what is going wrong. Sometimes we just want to stick our head in the sand and hope it goes away, and then thinking about different strategies or actions we can put in to course correct and somehow finding the energy to do it. So all that stuff's important too.
Because there's a lesson every time something goes wrong, and it's trying to get out from underneath the problem, fix the problem, and then learn the lesson is key with this. But
yes,
I find, and I hope I'm not the only one in business that finds this, we have, I don't know, 500 clients, and at any point, maybe 3 or 4 won't be entirely happy with us.
Mm-hmm.
Not, you know, we're not cocking things up left, right and centre, but they didn't get a response as quickly as they wanted, or something doesn't make sense, or in our world, we've given them a tax bill that they don't like. And the overriding feeling I get from the team is if there's 2 or 3 people complaining, they see that as indicative of the entire business, because those people are shouting the loudest. People that are happy with us don't generally, you know, they don't just ring us up to say, oh, that was great, that tax thing you did last week. We get that, but not to the same level. So it's, I guess my first point is, you need to get out from the doom and gloom of this client is complaining and therefore everyone is unhappy and therefore the business isn't working and therefore we need to completely rethink entirely everything we're doing, right? Because people that are not happy shout loudest, and rightly so, but it's not, doesn't mean that, you know, like we have less than 1% of our client base unhappy. That's really good, right? If you look at the other way, 99% of people are really happy. It's hard to get out into that mindset when all you're getting is the comeback from the clients consistently.
It is, and I just love the fact that our first sort of topic is actually to get straight into mindset, because it's actually very, very useful to talk about that. There's a piece of work that's been done that's famous now, the growth mindset versus the fixed mindset, and that would be an example of this. So the growth mindset would be being able to look for, face into when things go wrong, take your learnings, take your insights, and come up with an action plan to A, fix the current problem, and B, for the organisation to get stronger based on learnings, would be an example of the growth mindset. A fixed mindset in there would be, I'm a bit worried I'm going to lose a client, or I'm a bit worried I'm going to get shouted at, or actually I'm a bit arrogant, I can't quite believe it's their fault, and just not facing into it, so there's no learning taken, and if there's no learning, the company doesn't get stronger, and ultimately they lose that piece of work, they lose, and before you know it, company's not in great shape at all. Yeah. And we've mentioned courage before, and I think, as always, courage is such a useful thing for an entrepreneur and a leader. And this is another example. To be able to face in where you've gone wrong, take your learnings, move forward.
Well, I think understanding that things go wrong sometimes is the key first learning to this. Mm-hmm. Because everyone's business is their baby, right? And you mm-hmm. want everyone... You know, well, very few people set out to swindle other people, or... No, it's in no one's business plan that we're going to be rubbish at what we do and hope that enough people pay us anyway, right? Everyone wants to deliver good quality stuff, and therefore it's easy to take. It's like someone telling you they don't like your child's haircut, right? If someone comes and interacts with your business and doesn't come away happy, the natural position for most business owners is to take a front at that and be upset, because there's that challenge coming back, right? And it's a big step to be able to actually say, you know what, yeah, that has gone wrong, and I understand why that's gone wrong, and it's not, hopefully, not typical, but it has gone wrong. And the fact, so that first bit of not burying your head, and nothing ever goes wrong, and it's always their fault, not our fault, is a big step. Once you get past that, I think it's really important to be comfortable knowing that things go wrong, to then be upfront with your customer mm-hmm. and say, do you know what, that didn't work as well as it should. Something's gone wrong here, and you know, either we don't know why or we do know why, and this is what we're going to do to fix it. You can win customers through that start off the journey with a poor experience. If you can fix it well, you can create raving fans out of the adversity, right? Yeah. You must have seen that in retail.
Oh totally. I can actually throw a stat at that as well. We know we like a good stat on this podcast, so... There's research to say when you do exactly that, so it's not a great experience, you apologise profusely, you fix it and make it better going forward, there's a 22% uplift on revenues attached to that, because the client is so delighted, they trust you even more, and the spend flows through. So it's hugely powerful. Massive insight, that.
That's huge, mm-hmm. right?
Mm-hmm.
Wow. I mean, I remember going to Centre Parks with a group of friends and our kids just before the pandemic. We all paid for the kids to do, you know how Centre Parks works, yep. right? You go and then you pay for everything. And we paid for the kids to do jet skiing in the swimming pool. And one of the jet skis, the battery pack had failed.
Mm-hmm.
So the kids all got on it, and it was my daughter, went and got on this jet ski and it didn't work. The guy that was running the session, this teenage lad, did his best by swimming around and pushing her jet ski, but she didn't get what we paid. And I was like, you know what, she's happy. She came off smiling, so I thought, you know what, we'll just take the hour and move on. And my friend, who is a sales director for a big PLC, he's a big corporate bigwig, and he's all about customer service in the business that they're in. And he said, no. We're going to, even if you don't want your money back, they need to know that it didn't go wrong, and they need to know that you weren't happy, and they need to come up with a plan. And he went there, and again, he was talking to relatively young people that probably didn't have the ability to carte blanche fix mm-hmm. the problem. But the way he spoke to them, it wasn't confrontational, it wasn't aggressive, he was very much like, something's gone wrong here, and you need to acknowledge that it's gone wrong, and then you need to come up with a plan as to kind of make us happy, basically. It wasn't as direct as that, but that was the gist of it. And from that, without feeling like we actually complained at all, we got a significant amount of vouchers from Centre Parks without... Mm-hmm. And I think if we'd gone the other way and not been confrontational, but got complained as typically people complain, I don't think we'd have got that result. And I think him seeing the other side of it from being in that job of how to look after people, he knows what buttons to press, right? And then got us to where we wanted to be. My point being, centre-backs took us from mildly disgruntled to super happy.
Yeah.
And yes, there was a financial cost to them, but it's more than, you know, we've been to centre-backs for years since then, so they've got their money's worth, their 22% out of us. So...
And if that hadn't had, you may not have gone back to centre parts. You might have subconsciously been, even though it's very convenient for a young family, you might have been subconsciously dissatisfied and gone elsewhere.
Yeah.
Whereas that interaction with the vouchers took that away, and of course you're going to go back because of all the upside of centre parts. Yeah. So it's holds.
I mean, the stats, I haven't got the exact stats, but it's well known in hospitality that people will go back to a restaurant if the food's not great, but they don't go back if the service is not. And that's, I think that's really interesting, because when you go to a restaurant, in my mind, all the pricing is attached to the food.
Mm.
Like, there is not a, you know, you can have a rump steak or a sirloin steak or a ribeye steak, and they've got different prices, and you can have it flung on the plate, positioned nicely. That isn't a part of it, is it? It's you pay for the food, but you judge them on the service.
That's fascinating.
It's really fascinating, by the psychology of that.
Yeah, yeah.
And I tell you what, the it's really strange, but most bad service in hospitality happens after everyone's eaten.
Okay.
So the bit that frustrates the most people, and I know this from speaking to various publicans, that bit where you finished dessert and then you're waiting for the bill.
Mm-hmm.
And then you've got the bill and then you're waiting to pay.
Mm-hmm.
That's the bit where the waiters are giving you less priority because they're focused on getting the food out, because that's what people want. But if you would have at some point in your life sat in a restaurant for 25 minutes after you finish and the kids are had enough and they're running around and you're waiting for someone to come and take your money from
you. That's right.
That's the bit where you lose, in that world, you lose so many customers at that point. Even though every one of those customers, if you ask them what they were going to that food for, that restaurant for, they were going for the food, and they've had the food at that point, so they should be happy. But that's where you lose them.
That's fascinating. And if I'm a self-aware or business-aware or customer-aware owner of that restaurant business, I want to pay attention to that. Because if I can fix that bit in the customer journey and make that as good as it can be, then the insight that you've said is, and people come back again and again and again. If I see that as the job's been done, they've had their food, but I now need to get the next plate out and the next plate out and ignore that last bit of the customer journey, the whole thing can fall down.
100%.
Wow.
And it's one of those things you don't think about, because, like you said, people are paying you for the food. The chef's cooking the food.
Yeah.
But that's not the bit where the frustration... It's very rare that the food comes out, especially in England, the food comes out. If you're not happy with it, you eat it anyway, don't you? You don't send it back. But even then, if you do send something back, it comes back better, and then everyone's happy. And that you wouldn't bat an eyelid. But that bit where the service breaks down is the bit that people get. But I imagine it's a part that industry is quite complacent on. Because the other option is what you get people to pay up front. And then that has its own issues where people wanting more drinks. So anyway, I feel like we've rambled a little bit there.
Bear in mind we haven't podcasted for a few months, Matt. We're getting back in. So here's one then. You must have seen this in the many clients that you have and you help. The one that, let's call it people performance and maybe a new hire that isn't working out. In fact, let's go with that. Really, I've seen this quite a lot recently. New hires not working out. Have you seen that, and what advice do you give people?
Well, 100% I've seen it. I think every business, that's the danger to any business is recruiting. And it comes back to that. If it's the business owner that's done the recruiting, you're back to that, this is our, you know, it's our baby, this business, and therefore you expect everyone to come in and treat it like you do, which is unrealistic, I think, at best. But then, because it's your baby, and you've made that decision, you've got that unconscious bias that it's the right hire, even though all of the signs are telling you this is wrong, because you've gone through that recruitment process and you've signed it off, you've, you know, interviewed them, you've made the offer, you've signed them off, you got excited about joining, it takes more for you then to say, you know what, no, this isn't working, than if you're a leader of a corporate where a team has recruited mm-hmm. this and you're just seeing the evidence and saying, you know what, no.
Mm-hmm.
So I think for any owner-managed business, that's the first big hurdle, is that get out of the business owner's mindset and get them to see the wood for the trees. Mm-hmm. Because in most new hires, you can tell it's not working relatively quickly.
Yeah.
And if you can, you know, the first step is, you could look at it and say, well, this isn't working, and then just let it run to the end of probation and manage the personnel. That doesn't happen very often, to be honest. Most of the time, it goes one of two ways. Either we know it's not working, but we're too scared to do anything about it, so we just end up with an employee for the next however many years that's subpar. Or you very actively kind of lay the law down and say, right, this is what we actually need from this role, and this is what we need, and then the person kind of shapes up and moves on and becomes a valued member of the workforce. But and you can have as many interviews as you want, and I'm sure recruiters will tell me differently, but it's a lottery. You have to go with your gut feel, and most of the time, most people's gut is, they understand what their business needs and they will get the right person. But yeah, I think the first hurdle for any business that's hired incorrectly is the business owner themselves and their mindset around it.
Yeah. I agree with that. Were you going to say something?
I wasn't, no.
Are you sure?
Yeah, I'm good.
I think that scenario is painful to many business. Many business are growing and need the resource. And they get the resource and that's great.
And any bug on that seat will do.
Correct. Correct. And then in their heart of hearts, they're absolutely gutted when they realise that resource is not coming out. But to your point, they're a bum in a seat. So they persevere and. What going back to one of the best things you can do when things go wrong is have the courage to go and look clearly at what you feel. So yes, intuition wise, you probably do know things are going wrong, and the same intuition is saying, oh no, it might well work out. But big steer here, and I've seen it been done very, very successfully, is go after the clarity straight away. Where is it not good? And look at it clearly. If it then is the person, if it's the attitude, if it's the technical advice, if whatever, then have that conversation, be clear, spell it out, give that person a chance to turn it around, but stick with it. Regular conversation, back in the room, celebrate success, call out what's not great, and that is so powerful, because yes, there is a chance that person can get on board and you've suddenly got the next superstar, and that does happen, but also it can end the pain quicker for you and your business and your customers, but also the individual themselves. So that I've seen that done recently. And there are definitely, I don't know if it's a recruitment crisis or whatever, but there are certainly a lot of businesses desperate for resource at the moment. When they get one, they get very excited and then are pretty gutted so there may be a tendency just to keep going with it.
And I think a lot of people are nice people and don't want to have those difficult conversations because there's a family on the other end that have got mortgages and bills to pay, and you don't want to be the person that puts someone out of work, right? Fundamentally, that's a big, you know, it's a big step. Like I have this conversation with clients quite often, and it's a big step for a business owner to hire a member of staff. So certainly owner managed small businesses, totally. It's a massive step. It's an even bigger one to then end that relationship with someone, and it takes a lot of courage to have that difficult conversation and move that person on. But it's a massively costly, if you've not got 100% the right person, it's not, you know, there comes a point where it's not going to get any better, and it's a big outlay every month.
Huge.
On, you know.
And I think it's at this point responsible for to say at that point involving people definitely reach out and take some HR advice from an HR professional. So that's definitely what we'd advise you to do. A slightly different version of that story is the 18 months in and I've not done anything about it and that person's still in the business and I'm still not happy.
Yeah.
And what to do about it then. And what I have seen recently twice used successfully and relatively quickly is what is known as a performance improvement plan.
Yeah.
And again, take advice on that, HR advice on that. But that's sort of going back to what you could do after day one, which is getting really clear with the person where the performance issue is, but then formalising it in terms of this performance improvement plan with timescales, review periods, and quite quickly, if the performance doesn't change, you can actually get to an exit situation. So yeah. No matter where you are in somebody's journey, it's never too late to do something about it.
That's the key. And I think understanding what good looks like. Because if you come into a new job and it's never really been defined what exactly we want from you. Do we want you to bring 10 clients a week or 10 clients a day you know, email everybody and never speak on the phone. it's easy for you. You've been doing whatever it is you do for 10 years, 15 years, however long. So you know what good looks like and what you're supposed to do. And it amazes me how many times people don't articulate that to someone and then expect them to just know.
Yeah.
Like we said, they're never going to care about it as much as you. But if you don't tell them and write it down and measure what they're supposed to do and how many times they're supposed to do it and what does good look like, you can't then hold them accountable for it. You can't, it's unfair and you can't do it. So you've got to put that process in place and then just by putting that in place, you may have people realise, oh, by the way, I didn't realise I was supposed to be ringing 20 people a day. I've only been doing 10 and taking twice as long as I should have.
Yeah.
You know, now I know, I can fix that.
Yeah.
If you don't ever have it, you can sit there and be disgruntled with them. I mean, it's not their fault. It's 100% their fault, right?
You know, we like a good analogy on this podcast, so I feel as if I've not used one. But I mean, straight to a football analogy, that's the equivalent of a manager not telling any of his players or her players what he or she is looking for and then moaning profusely that they get beat.
Yeah.
And the number 11 is actually playing at number 3 and then the goalkeeper's up front and there's no midfield. It's actually exactly the same, isn't it?
100%. But it's so common. It's, you know, because people assume that everyone knows what they know, and that's a massive, massive hurdle to get over mindset-wise. Writing it down, putting it in the system is the biggest thing you can do when you're taking on a new employee. So we know what good looks like. Okay, what else? What else can we talk about where things don't go quite right?
Let's go more your classic professional territory.
Right.
What about cash flow?
Oh.
Because that may go, inverted commas, wrong sometimes. Most companies, actually.
I was actually having this conversation with a business last month. Yeah, last month. Where they run out of cash. They literally were expecting some money in and it didn't come in. And then the director rang me up and said, I've got a bit of a problem. I need to pay 35 grand of wages tomorrow and I don't have anything. No overdraft, no cash in the bank. 40 grand should have come in yesterday and it hasn't. And it's not coming in until 2 weeks' time. And it's really strange because, this is still his words, it's really strange because we've had our best quarter we've ever had. Our revenue is double what it was. And it's an easy answer, right? If you're a business that is growing at a pace and your customers pay you on 60 days, like this one does, and then don't pay you because of whatever crisis they've got, which may or may not be true, then your risk has doubled, right? You've gone, because in this business, they're putting tradesmen onto building sites. Those tradesmen get paid every 2 weeks. Now, our client gets paid from their customer every 60 days.
Mm-hmm.
So we're funding all of those contractors for six weeks or three payments, maybe more, maybe 8 weeks every cycle. without any money coming in. And if every time we're coming around to that 60 days, the figure they're paying has gone up by 20%, what we've got is an extra 20% of cost going out without anything coming in, and it rolls on and rolls on and rolls on, and suddenly we run out of cash.
Mm-hmm.
And that's A, why you should take advice from an accountant if your business is growing fast. We're particularly good at this, but that's not the point.
You are, man.
If our clients talk to us, because this is the problem, this client hadn't spoken to us, had almost assumed, because they'd always been cash and that their business was successful, there would always be cash. And then, you know, it's much easier to get money, to get the bank to help with that kind of thing, if it's not tomorrow that you need the money. Because the bank, the first thing that will do is make the bank nervous that you haven't got a clue what's going on. And it's hard to, you know, we were lucky that we managed to fix that, you going back to the customer and not forcing them to pay, but convincing them to pay. But the first thing you need to do is map your cash flow. Right? So if you feel like your cash flow is not going well today, almost certainly you're not at the bottom of that cash flow spiral yet, and it will get worse before it gets better. And actually, mapping it and understanding it gives you two things. It gives you A, the ability to create a plan to fix it,
mm-hmm.
and B, it puts on paper that it is okay, and it's going to get a bit worse, but it will get better. And that, knowing that it's, you know, whilst it might be going down the bank balance, it's part of the plan now, feels like you're in control. Whereas it doesn't otherwise.
I love that, because I think a chunk of the time businesses, and maybe it's all size of businesses, but certainly seen it in smaller businesses, get away with it. And you get away with it, and when you get away with it, you tend to feel good.
Yeah.
You've got away with it. Suddenly it's now not a screaming, honking priority. It's a deep breath, you move on to the next thing. You sort of forget about it and assume that it's going to right itself. I suspect that's possibly not 100%. The best way to handle
but
that.
But it's definitely common. So you get through this month and you pay this month's wages, and then you have a couple of months and it's fine.
Yeah.
And then the VAT bill comes around again, and suddenly you can't pay the wages because you paid the VAT bill.
Yeah.
That 3-month cycle is massively common.
Yeah.
I mean, it's going back to stats. And for sure, it's like 80% of UK businesses are cash flow negative at least once every quarter.
80%?
80%.
Of UK businesses?
Yeah, we look at it in our client base and we can look at all this. It's because the VAT goes out every quarter. And that quarter, you're paying 3 months worth of VAT out in one go.
Yeah.
So you have to have a serious amount of cash coming in to not be cash negative that month.
Yeah.
So that's, that is almost meaningless because it's natural and therefore not a disaster. And secondly, you should be sort of whipping the cash out of your cash flow if you're monitoring it, so that you don't treat it as your income when it comes in, and you don't therefore treat it as a cost going out. Right? It's just it's the government's money, and you just squirrel it away and pay it when it's due. But anyway, focusing on a short-term cash flow is the first thing to do if your cash flow is going wrong. Second thing is to look for easy wins. Most businesses that sell on credit will have a couple of people that you should have chased last week or last month and you haven't because you like them or whatever else. And I'll hold my hands up to being in this position as well.
Me too.
And what happens that I can see. And I say it with a smile because everyone's got that.
Uh-huh, uh-huh.
And if you've got a cash flow problem, the first person you should speak to, other than your accountant, should be whoever owes you the most money that's overdue.
Mm-hmm.
And you need to then be polite, but go in with the mindset that that is your money that's in their bank account and you need to liberate it.
Mm-hmm.
And most people will pay on a phone call. They don't pay on emails, they don't pay on statements, but if you ring them up and say, but hold on, then, you know, then they've got to come up with an excuse to your face, and that's very different to just hiding behind an email. So, yeah, map the cash flow, then lean on the people that you should have lent on weeks ago that owe you some money. And at that point, that may be enough to fix the short-term problem, but will it fix the long-term one? Then you need to understand why we got into this mess. And is it just because we don't chase debt, you know, effectively? is our margin not what we think it is? Are our credit terms weighted in favour of our customers and not us? There's a few levers then that you can pull, but you need to diagnose what the symptoms are the same. We've run out of cash, right? That's the symptom. The illness in the business could be one of many things, and you need to then get to the bottom of what the illness is.
No, this is really good. I'm out of the habit here of time. I've just realised we're at 30 minutes. What I love about that example, let's be honest, in both these examples we've given, one about people and new recruits underperforming, the other one about cash flow and cash running thin, we could, inverted commas, call these stressful situations, emotional situations, and humans tend to be not at the best. And I think that is it's linked to the first bit on mindset, but in that last couple of minutes, you went through different scenarios, different thinking of how to work out, how to get past the current cash flow issue. And that, for me, is massive. The ability to be able to go, okay, I can now see it. What are we going to do about this? What can we do to turn this situation around in a calm and rational way is worth its weight in gold. And yet, it can feel counterintuitive because you're sat there and you are worried, you're anxious, you're fearful. I mean, that situation, that guy potentially couldn't pay his workforce even though it was record revenues. That's not a good news story at all. But he phoned you, so he was very wise and. But it's the ability to access our best thinking. It's a huge competitive advantage, actually. And let's be honest, we all face situations called things are going wrong. Any business faces that. I guess it's how you choose to respond to it and give space to actually think and then take it from there.
100%. I think a big point to take away is every single business owner has someone that's not happy with them. It's par for the course to have a couple of customers that are not feeling the love, not feeling they're getting what value for money or whatever.
Or even HMRC are not happy with them.
Oh yeah, 100%, right? And most people are not happy with HMRC for sure. I mean, I have a client who is reputationally brilliant. They're award-winning as a business. They've got industry recognition nationally for what they do, right? They are, and they are genuinely great at what they do, exceptional. And I was talking to him the other day, I said, what's this? He said, oh, that's some legal fees, don't worry about that. I said, well, what's that relate to? Oh, we're being sued by this company and that company, and it's probably, it'll go away, it'll be fine, you know. I said, oh, okay. Was it your fault? Like, is it? He said, oh, yeah, some of it didn't go quite right, and, you know, it's all right, we'll go to court, we'll fix it, it'll work. I mean, I'm not telling the story because my client was really blasé about it. My point is that unless you knew that was happening, you wouldn't,
yes,
you wouldn't assume that that business would be in that position, because everything points towards all the customer reviews, every interaction with them is tip top and perfect. Even that best of breed business has got a disgruntled client that's taken them to court, right? I'm not saying everyone should be comfortable being taken to court. My point is, every business has it.
Yeah.
And actually, if you're sat there listening thinking, well, none of my customers are happy, it just means they haven't quite got to the point where they're going to grump at you about it. But it always happens, right? So there we go. That's a happy note to end on.
That's good. You know, I've been the optimist. I see you're ending in hope. There's hope for any business to know that everyone else does face that as well.
Yeah.
And in many ways, this is just part of doing business, being in business, leading business.
Yeah.
And we've talked about actually different scenarios that can be extremely emotional and really hold us back, derail us, and what to do about that.
And I guess the final point is, it's your business and it's your rules. Go back to that disgruntled customer. Like, we've learned over the last few years that some people are never going to be happy with what you do. Even if you bend over backwards and fix all their problems, some people are just not happy. And you don't have to work for those people. Like, it's your game and it's your rules. And if someone is just horrible to your people, then get rid of them. Let them go and be someone else's problem. It doesn't matter how much money they pay you, you'll find, you know, you'll find the work to replace them, but you won't find the people. You'll find the new customers easier than you'll find new staff. And if you've got someone that's abusing your staff, that should be a hard red, you know,
yeah,
big red flag, right? Okay, right, that's 35 minutes we've rambled on. That's the problem, see, because we haven't recorded for so long. We're just...
And we're in person, so we're getting carried away with ourselves.
Right, okay, well look, I feel like we've covered loads there, and that was really positive. Despite talking about when things go wrong, that was a positive conversation. So we will leave it there. We will be back, I promise, next week.
We will.
With more podcast gold. In the meantime, give us some love on social once you've heard this, and we will see you all soon.
Goodbye.
This is the Mind Your Business podcast.